Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again tonight, long tongue liar to my midnight rider, it's Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing... I'm okay.
But surviving.
Yeah, as you know, and people listening to my ramblings at the beginning of these podcasts, I've been, you know, dealing with that foot issue, and... Today, the powers of darkness decided, hey, let's give him a back problem, too, today. So, my back's been killing me all day. You know, maybe it's from supporting these podcasts. No, I'm just kidding.
It's from hunching over your computer working tirelessly to set up all this content. That's what it is.
You know, I laugh because it might be true. Anyway, so we are here to discuss the 10th. And dare I say, the penultimate episode of this fourth season of Fargo. And it was titled Happy. We can debate whether they should have titled it that or not momentarily. Let me just give you a few of the specs before we dive into the episode. Did I just belch on air? Thanks. So as I mentioned in the previous podcast, this was going to be an episode that actually had two director credits. And I believe we decided that probably means this is one of those results of re-editing and shuffling that Hawley said he was doing. So in this one episode, there were probably scenes that might have been intended for other episodes that ended up on this one, and thus you had two directors, and the directors being Dana Gonzalez and Sylvain White, who we've talked about because they directed previous episodes of the season, you know. So no need to talk about them. And... And Noah Hawley, he took sole writing credit on this one. No need to talk about that either. So we can get right to the episode. Happy. We kicked off the episode with this montage of the gang war that's going on in Kansas. And you can't help but notice through all the photos in the newspapers and the stills, as well as watching, you know, Josto and Gaetano doing their thing, all your things like, wow. So many black bodies here. It does not look like the cannons are winning this war just based on the montage that we're watching.
Yeah. And to keep my streak going, the song that plays throughout this is called Insane Asylum by Coco Taylor.
Don't worry. There are a couple notable musical things that I do want mentioned as we go on to this podcast. One I kind of hinted at in that intro. So we will be talking about those. And then we had that nice little stare off between Arietta and Ethelreda. You had to give these two women these complicated names. Anyway. But, you know, just kind of, and just setting up something as I kind of was looking forward to, that we're finally going to get some payoff with the Ethelreda stuff. Oh, and by the way, if there is something to be happy about in this episode, and there may be a few things actually, it's that finally, it only took until the 10th episode, Ethelreda's playing a significant part in the overall storyline of the show and really coming through. I mean, we've already said, you know, if she's not the smartest character on the show, she's darn close.
And probably is.
I would say very likely is. You know, I mean, the rabbi seemed to have some brains in his head, so he was probably, you know, clever. But she's a smart cookie. I love that. Mm-hmm. I use the phrase smart cookie. Oh, God, I'm like 90 years old now. So
that's one smart cookie.
You do make a smart cookie, and I do like them smart. Or is it a short cookie? I do like them short. That's a Honeymooners reference. I don't know if anyone will get that. It's when Ed Norton has... Anyway, so... after that, we also... But perhaps more interestingly or importantly, we see Otis leading a raid on the Fadas. Now we realize that he's been caught between a rock and a hard place. But obviously, Loy is the one who really has, you know, his nuts in a grinder right here, because there's no way he does this otherwise. I mean, this is a major betrayal of the people whose pocket he's been in for who knows how many months, years, whatever. So I don't know if they revealed that in the ads beforehand, but when I saw that, I was like, "Ooh, how is Otis going to be long for this world if he's doing this?" Of course,
right? But he seems, the thing that I like is he seems free as he has been throughout the show and more confident doing it, and that at least part of the yoke has been taken off of his neck. And you see when he marches in to conduct the arrest, he's not hesitant. And when he's at the station getting cheered, and that he seems as put together as he's been throughout the show, like right. for a moment,
right.
He actually lived up to something.
Yeah, he went from being an ultimate mess to Elliot Ness, you know.
Yes. Look at that. You're on fire.
Fire. You're on fire. Anyway, get out of here. Wrong podcast. we then get this kind of this nice little scene between Loy and his wife. I guess she's cutting his hair or something. That's irrelevant. What I really liked about that scene, which then leads to the scene where Loy and his wife are meeting with the fellow we've heard about, Happy, you know, the guy whose cousin Leon has been working for Loy and doing a bang up job of it, dude. But it's interesting, both in the conversation with Loy and then in the meeting with Happy, I would go as far to say that the wife kind of becomes more dominant. Like she makes the case both with Loy and then later on with Happy. You know, she's the stronger, more empathetic person and makes the case that Loy doesn't in that scene with Happy, and Loy kind of ends up, you know, listening to her. Maybe and probably right now, because there is no more, as I'm sure I'm probably taking words right out of your mouth, because you'd probably be the first one to say it, because there is no more Dr. Senator, I think his wife now becomes the closest, most obvious and wise confidant that he has left at this point.
Right. And he's so taken by what she says and how she acts throughout the episode that he reflects on that later in the episode to talk about how tough she is. And
yes.
So he gets sort of the measure of her in this time of toughness. They really do a good job of showing him throughout this episode, almost at his wit's end. He looks tired. He knows they're losing. And she even is the one where she says, it doesn't have to take that long. You can do this. Everybody's getting tired of this. We can still win it. She sort of cheers him up and leads the charge and really, but for her, he would probably not have been successful in the meeting, and things wouldn't have played out the way they played out. He really had her to lean on, and she really carried the weight this episode.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting that it does, but though for her, it does come down to, you know, justice for their presumably dead son. And then they'll make a deal here. And of course, as we see later on, and as we already know, Satchel ain't dead. There was that part of me that kept thinking, is there any way they'll find this out? But I keep thinking, as every single person watching the show who's watched Fargo before, we're all assuming he's going to be Mike Milligan. We also are going on the assumption he's never returning to his family. I mean, obviously they could throw a total left turn at us, but the way things are shaping up and the way we see in this episode, I'm pretty sure this is a kid who's going to be making it on his own for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I would be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked, but that sort of seemed like a statement of who he had become. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him very little or none in the final episode.
I'm going to say we will see one more scene of him. because I think and we can actually, because his stuff was fairly quick in this episode, because I think we only cut to him twice. We cut to him once where he's just establishing that he's just still walking down the road with that dog and whatever. And then later on, when he gets approached by that red pickup truck and how he deals with the two idiots in the car. I love them saying, using the phrase, "This is my world," which I didn't take the time. I got a suspicion that's a line that's been used before. I don't know if it was by his father or if Mike Milligan says it in season two at some point. If, you know, I'm probably going to check after this podcast because now I'm curious. But the way that line felt, it felt like this is something that's been said before. But he's already become, you know, just the way he holds that gun and everything is entirely, you know, self-sufficient at this point.
Nice subtle thing about that scene is we see him walking the dog. Mm-hmm. When he's walking the dog and the truck pulls up, the dog's on a leash.
Yes.
And very subtle, but announcing to the world, like, everything around him, he's in control of now. And he's in control of the dog. He takes total control of that situation and scares those guys off. But you have no doubt when he pulls that gun, he's willing to use it. And we also, you know, Satchel's always been a well-behaved, quiet kid. Mm-hmm. Maybe the most he's ever talked, and he certainly never talked that way to anyone.
Right.
So you see the profound change. I mean, you know, he's not anybody to tell somebody to F all the way off. But he does here, and you have no doubt that the change in him is profound. That's why I wonder if we'll see him again. You might be right, but I don't think we'll see a lot of him. I think this was showing, this scene was, everything about him now has changed. And it was good. It was the imagery was good and subtle and striking. And we see this kid's going to be a badass.
Right. I just feel, despite the fact that everybody watching knows who he appears, who he's going to be, I just think they're going to just toss in one more thing just to cement that bridge to season two of Fargo. I just feel that it feels like there's just going to be one more thing. I don't know if it'll be, you know, if they're going to bounce ahead in time at all. Wouldn't it be great if no one knew this was coming and we saw, like, we got a little flash of, like, you know, Bakeem Woodbine as Mike Milligan at the end of the season or something like that?
That'd be awesome.
And I would be ecstatic for it. I'd love to. Hey, he's one of the few characters who survived their respective season of Fargo. You know, he can always bring him back. So zipping back to the episode, as you said, Otis gets the huzzas at the police station. But it's also interesting that you can tell that the other cops, or at least the major ones, the higher ranking ones, I should say, they know he's been on the take. I don't know if that means that they were as well, because if they were, they'd kill him himself. But one of them makes a comment to him about, you know, when you bite something about biting the hand that feeds you, you're going to feel the burn. And it's, of course, as coincidentally, he then gets the call from Josto, pretty much threatening him. And of course, he hangs up on him. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. How are you going to survive this episode? You're not.
Right.
A very interesting turn of events we see taking place in this episode is when we bounce back to Gaetano and Josto. And again, we had seen them together in the images that put together that opening montage. So technically we already, you know, quote unquote, saw them working together. But what's interesting is these two, they're not just like working in sync together, probably better than anyone would have expected. What's kind of weird, at least for parts of this episode, Gaetano might be the more rational one all of a sudden.
I didn't take a lot of notes, but one of the notes I put was Gaetano is being reasonable.
Yeah. Whereas Josto, maybe not so much. Because when Ebal is talking to him, you know, New York wants this all wrapped up, you know, Gaetano, the one that we had seen in previous episodes being the more bloodthirsty one, although Josto has has given orders which are just as brutal as anyone. Gaetano's the one who kind of, you know, in Italian, I think, pretty much says, you know, after all this, war is not good for business, and they know that they do need to wrap this up. And they also put together their plan. They want to get a new, weaker boss for the cannons, so they can. But Loy, I put the note. He should be flirtered too. I think it's. I don't know what rhymes with flirter. And of course, oh, by the way, as we already saw from that phone call, and they just confirm it here, they want to kill Otis too. I think he calls him, oh, first curse of the podcast. I think he calls him, you know, like a dirty rat fuck or something like that. Rat fuck.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
So the dirty rat cop has to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always the way. That's what you get. Yeah, corrupt kappa.
You stinking dirty rat. Mm.
Now we get to the first musical thing. Okay, and I think this is this. Even though we've already kind of talked about the satchel stuff, so we don't really need to talk about that. But anyone who knows me well and is listening to this podcast, and by the way, those two probably don't intersect very much. they use a version, and there are multiple versions of this song. They use a version of "God's Gonna Cut You Down" in this scene of Satchel walking down the road. I am very partial to that song. I am known, and I'm not exaggerating. And I don't consider myself much of a quote unquote singer. People, including the people who run different karaoke things, as well as just regular patrons in places, request me to do that song. Because I kick ass on that song. It's just, it's one of like two or three, that's my song in karaoke. And I do that one all the time. It just sets people's, you know, hairs on it and whatever. I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't really think I captured it when I did the intro at all. I don't care. Cause it's just, you know, be weird. But when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's fantastic. I want this scene to go on for another 3 or 4 minutes just because I want to hear how much they're going to play. You know, it didn't go on that long. So that I thought that was pretty cool. So just.
Yeah, I love that song. And that was a version by the Golden Gate Quartet that they used on this. Now, that's a song that's been covered a bunch, as you say. Mm-hmm. But I like that version. There was very much sort of a gospel focus to the back end of this episode, because later we'll talk about the final song, but very much a gospel feel of that. And I wanted to jump back for a second to talk about something that I thought was interesting. I did find it amusing that Happy, whose name is Lionel Holloway, if you look at the picture, I froze it, and I wonder if that's sort of a nod to combining the names of Lionel Hampton and Cab Calloway, two famous musicians from that time. Hmm. Wonder if that was a sort of a nod to that sort of the older generation that was being phased out by the jazz cats of the day. But I did find it amusing, and I wrote, was this like the origin story of Two-Face, that you carry two pictures, that Happy would look at the two pictures? It almost looked like he was looking at them to make a decision.
Yeah.
When he talked about listening to your forefathers, and he has that dude carry the two pictures wherever he goes.
Right.
So I thought, you know, the way this show always does little quirks and little idiosyncrasies, I thought that was a new one. And when the guy just was standing there with him, I wondered why. And then he actually sort of seemed to refer to him after Loy's wife proposes. And then he goes along with, of course, he's not good for his word, but he does seem to refer to those in making his decision.
Right. Yes, he does. Absolutely. And again, I'm curious about titling the episode Happy. Because I can't imagine we're titling it Happy based on that character, because he doesn't really play that significant a part for the entire episode to merit that. But then again, it could be just one of the themes, because there are things that happen throughout the episode which may result in a certain, shall we say, level of satisfaction. You know, so certain characters might be unexpectedly, you know, at least for the moment, happy. You know, happy right. to learn certain things, happy to have accomplished certain things, you know, so on and so forth. It was just one of those things I was just going, why did you name this one Happy when I first see that character? Then as I watched the entire episode, I was like, all right, I guess I get it now.
Well, happy to see your nemesis taken off in a police car.
Yeah. That's been, oh, we'll wait till we get that. Ooh, so much fun. Speaking of Ethel Rita, we see that she was doing, you know, get a chance to see her doing some research, and that's when she starts seeing articles relating to things that happened. It looked like one of them was relating to what happened in Liberal, Kansas, because they mentioned that body that was found.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure that was the guy that was in the trunk of the car in the previous episode. So I was wondering I was trying to figure out, is there any way she could find out about Satchel through the newspapers? Why would any newspaper have anything about him? That didn't happen. I thought we might get some confirmation of people who died from the tornado, just to confirm that. But if that wasn't that paper, I didn't notice it. It could have happened, and I just didn't see it. I just saw that one thing.
Yeah, I love the looking at papers, and I'm sure you know this more than I do, but I found out probably a couple of years ago that oftentimes writers will spend a lot of time, somebody will go write all this fake text and set up these fake newspapers for use in shows. And it would be cool if somehow you could go get a copy of the ones they made up just to see what was in them and see what you could find, the Easter eggs maybe that were there.
Right. Yes, I do get a kick out of that. I've seen that before as well. Following that moment at the library, we have her talking with her mom. And that's when we finally get a more informational conversation about this ghost thing that we've been seeing. Because she mentioned about them being cursed. And her mother talks about this thing that's haunted the family call. And it's referred to as the Roach. Did not.
No, I think she said his name was Theodore Roach.
Oh, okay. Is that it?
I think that's what was said.
Maybe,
yeah.
You know, maybe the was short, maybe I wrote the and that was short for Theodore. Hey, it's the Roosevelt anyway. And she described him as being like his eyes were sewn shut and he had a wooden nose, whatever. But basically that's the thing that's been kind of popping up and following Ethel Rita at times, and pretty much, we believe that's also what we saw pop up at the train station what's her name again? Zelmer?
Zelmer, yeah.
Zelmer, right. Who I thought we were going to, for some reason, I thought we were going to see her in this episode, maybe because I showed her antecedently. Antecedently, thank you. Oof, I cannot. Those who write cannot speak. But I guess they put that they're just actually for the Theodore Roach, not so much for her. And then you know, Loy's son, I guess he's still, you know, overseeing things at the funeral home for all their ill-gotten goods that they're smuggling and that are there. And that's when she tells him that she wants to talk to his father. And then we get that great, I'll say one of the great scenes in the entire episode, where Arietta, you know, makes a beeline right for the porch and confronts her about the ring. Finally, the ring. Finally. I love this back and forth. This is one of my favorite things in the whole episode. Absolutely.
Oh, I loved it because when it first happens, you aren't sure how much Ethel Rita is going to stand up to her, but she makes it clear right away. She's not scared. She's not intimidated. She calls her bluff. And Orietta does score a point when she does say, how does it feel to know you're right, but nobody cares?
Right.
So she sort of scores a point to hammer home, you know, at that time period, if Ethel Rita had made those claims against Orietta would have probably gotten the benefit of the doubt without solid proof.
Right.
But Ethel Rita doesn't back down and stands up to her in a way that says, you know, go ahead, take your shot. So that's what I think it throughout the season, the promise of Ethel Rita is realized in this episode, but it would have been nice for her to not be benched so much, because she's a very smart, very formidable character, and seeing her in this episode, it really was rewarding to me.
Yes. I thought it was finally a payoff for the character that we'd gotten built up in those first couple episodes and basically did very little to nothing with sense. And when that little exchange where Arietta says, there's a word for people like you, and then Ethel Rita turns on, no, that's your word. You invented it to make yourself feel bigger. I'm assuming the word that she's referring to is the word that rhymes with bigger. But that,
yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. See, look how I was able to get away with that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was an intentional, the way that was framed. And but the way she diffuses her is awesome. And it's also you sort of see in this scene, you know, it makes me wonder, is this a budding relationship that pays off? That Loy's family and the Putneys are going to be tied together through Loy's son and her, because they seem to be getting pretty close enough that Ethel Rita's mom tells him, be careful, I've got a shotgun by the bed.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. And that, well, unfortunately, we only have one more episode to go, so we'll see. I mean, then again, it could be a super long episode. It is Noah Hawley, and, you know, he... And sometimes with some of these final episodes, they get everything done in the first half of it, and then the rest is just, you know, an extended epilogue. So who knows what to expect next week. So after that, then that's when we get that meeting, happy end, you know, Cousin Leon are meeting with the Fadas. And I'm watching that scene and I'm going, well, is he what you said? Is, you know, is he just basically betraying what he had said to Loy and his wife? And the fact that he actually has the line, some people got no respect for a promise, makes me go, oh, sounds like he is. Sounds like, you know, which I found a little, I don't know if shocking is the right word, but, you know, surprising, you know, especially when you think about the color lines of the time, that he would do something like this.
Well, I think.
Or it could be a long con. Leon, it could be a con. It could be a con, you know.
It could. Leon and Happy, I think, are focused on the indignity of when Loy beat Leon.
Yes,
that's true. And Loy broke his word to, you know, to look after Leon and take care of him and beat him. So I don't think Happy sees it as a violation. But we also see Happy doesn't like the fact that Loy is more willing to be out in the open, that he doesn't stay sort of in his place, if mm-hmm. you will.
Yep.
And there's that discussion of, you know, sort of the old generation versus the new generation. How do you do things? And Happy would be happier to be in the background. But he also drives a pretty tough bargain and wants a lot with Josto, asks for more even than maybe he would get from Loy. But I think it's that slight. But again, if this show had been edited and done in a different way, maybe that would seem more potent, but the way it's done, it just seems like a betrayal the way it showed to us and in the right time frame which they compress all those events.
Right. And during this scene between them, that the alderman, you know, the future father-in-law for Josto, you know, busts in on the meeting, and then they kind of, takes him outside, you know, to another room. Him and Gaetano is there, and Alderman is dropping, you know, like every, you know, possible Italian derogatory term, you know, like greasy wop and so on and so forth, and greaseball and whatever. And here's something I probably should have mentioned to you before we started recording, but I'm mentioning it now because it didn't occur to me until I just saw my note about it. The moment that Gaetano punches the Alderman, like right in the face, I guess in the nose or something, I had a little glitch in my cable airing of the show, and it kind of froze on me, and it froze for a little while, and then it kind of like bounced ahead to in the middle of a scene of Loy talking to his man Opal just before they went to commercial. So I don't know if it was 10 seconds or a minute and a half. I if anything happened from the moment Gaetano hit the guy in the nose to the end of the Loy Opal conversation, I have no idea what happened. So if you watched it, and if it was normal for you, if there's anything notable that had happened there, let me know. Let us all know, because I don't know.
Well, it was because Gaetano punches him twice.
Oh,
and man. And it is funny that they set you up, because we later find out what's coming, but it's the first time Gaetano's used violence that we're sympathetic towards him.
Right.
Because this guy's a, you know, all this is a political arrangement. And now that the politics aren't working for him, he wants to back out and uses all this language, showing that he really doesn't care about his daughter. If this is how he really felt about these people, he wouldn't give his daughter to him. That for him too, it's about power, and he's just a scumball. So when Gaetano punches him, he punches him twice. It's satisfying. And there's a line, I don't remember if it was in the previews, but there's a great line that you missed where he says, "You can't do this. I'm a U.S. alderman. I'm this. You can't punch me." And Josto says, "Well, looks like to me you can," and he just sort of walks out. And again, you see the growing kinship between these brothers, because Josto says, "You hit him for me. I'm touched." And Gaetano's like, "You know, a little brother," and they share an embrace. So
right.
You see their relationship, which all of us thought was headed for violence between them, actually has grown stronger. And this is another instance of that in this episode. And then I guess where you came back in is when Loy finds out that Leon and Happy had went to see the Fadas, and that conversation,
okay.
Opal's telling him they had staked out the Fada place, and they had seen Leon. He'd said, "We saw Leon there," to which Loy's not surprised, but then he says they saw Happy too. And that's when at that point Loy looks forlorn, thinking all is lost, because if he doesn't have the support of Happy, he's in deep trouble. And he has that great remembrance of the birth of Satchel, and that's when he looks really old and really tired and talks about how strong his wife was.
Okay. So I had a feeling I missed something significant. God damn it. All right. But I did get those commercials that came after it, so that was great.
Anyway. Thank you. Thanks, TV.
So, and when we come out of commercial, that's when we get the scene with Satchel and the guys in the pickup, which we've already talked about, so we can move right past that. From this point on, it's the stuff with Otis coming home. We learn that he's being driven around by cops in a squad car, and we know that the Fadas and their men, they're looking to kill him. They've already they're staking out his house. One of them has already says he's already left him a surprise in his apartment. So we're looking for it to see if that was anything of note, whatever. And while they're waiting for Otis to arrive, that's when you have that scene between Gaetano and Josto just hanging out talking in the car, and This is the thing the only thing I wrote about it, other than, you know, talking about when he was 11, the girl named Adelina and her dad Groucho. And by the way, came very close to using Groucho in the introduction tonight, but then I changed my mind at the last minute. I just wrote bonding between brothers, because between this and the scene that I had missed that you just described, is you almost feel, oh, they really are brothers. You get the sense of actual, you know, affection and caring between them, even when they talk about their dick size.
Yeah.
You know, big like pickle. Like a pickle. He didn't say, he doesn't talk like Frankenstein. Anyway, while that's happening, Otis does come home to find his place wrecked. The Hummels have been smashed, and oh, good Lord, they burned holes into the eyes of the picture of his girl. So at this point, you know, they're like, okay, I'm trying. There's no probably way Otis is going to get out of this unless he becomes super heroic. But you are also getting flashes of as he runs out of his apartment, he sees the approaching silhouettes, he gets to his car, and of course he's screwing up, whatever. He's getting flashes of what he's done, you know, including, you know, killing Deffy and so on and so forth. Oh, I guess Deffy really is dead, so, you know, shucks. You never know. Could be. He might still be alive next episode. Could be. Anyway.
I did like the music overlay of this, which, you know, was his fiance singing. And, but the way this show is, I did wonder at the end of it. I think I'm pretty sure Otis is dead, but I'm not sure he's dead. Not in the way I'm sure Gaetano's dead.
Oh, no, he shot him three times. I think he's dead. I think he's smiling at his death. He's happy.
He's happy. I think so too, and I think the way it was done that all the vestiges of her were destroyed, all he had left of her was ruined. So the only way to be with her was when in death, and that's sort of why when he lets go, right. I did wonder he had it all together, but under this stress, his ticks come back and basically defeat him, and he can't get away, and he can't get the car started.
I just
wonder why he didn't pull out a gun. I just wonder why he didn't. I don't know. And I did like the way the scene started. I will go back because I forgot to mention this, but when he looks out the window and sees both sets of people waiting on him,
mm-hmm.
like he goes to the car at first. I thought he was in the car that he decided to go with the Fadas.
Yeah.
And went to see them. And then when you find out, no, it's actually just a police escort home. I like that. And then we see them waiting. And in for Otis, I have to say he had a brief moment of redemption, but in the end, RIP Otis.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the problem then becomes it's another one of those characters / storylines that by the end of the day doesn't end up adding up to much, you know, kind of like what happened with Deffy. You know, it's like, okay. And it does become one of those things where you start part of me, again, it's the writer in me, starts wanting to look at previous episodes and like, okay, if I just pluck the Otis character out of this, how much does that actually impact things? A little bit, you know, when he had the raid on the cannons, you know, in that one episode and so on, but minor, still exceedingly minor. So
yeah,
whatever, it is what it is. But back to what happens, because we kind of saw the writing on the wall for Otis from the get-go. I mean, and when the song is playing, it's like, okay, it's just a matter of time before he's dead. You know, he's not going to suddenly, you know, become, you know, Superman here or something. But then when Gaetano's walking and then starts to, like, to jog or run back to the car, he trips and blows his own head off. I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either, but let me say it was beautiful because it on the board, none of us bet that's how Gaetano went out, but it's a wonderful, quirky kind of Fargo thing they did with it. And I have to give the writers some credit. It's a callback to when he slips on the ice and the kid laughs at him outside the store. And he almost killed that kid for laughing at him when they were walking in the store and he slipped. And I thought that was a neat callback to a little moment that the writers planted a seed and delivered on. And so, you know, at the moment it happened, I was stunned, but after I thought about it for a second, I thought that was pretty clever.
Right. What is there? I feel, I hope I don't mean to derail the podcast at all, but we're doing so well on time. Who cares? Is there something I watched in the last couple months that had a scene where someone accidentally drops a gun and it ends up like blowing off their head or something? Does that sound familiar to you? I feel like that's something I saw at some point in the last few months. I don't know if it was on, it could have been on Lovecraft Country. It could have been on one of the superhero like shows that we watched. I just, there's something very familiar feeling about that. Oh, it was I just remember what it was. Now it was oh god, now I know what it was. Oh my god, it was Castle Rock. Jesus Christ. No, a gun is dropped and it ends up blowing her head off. So that I just remembered that. Jesus Christ. And that's more than a couple months ago. Probably something else happened. To me, it always reminds me of like the, it's like, oh, so dude, you're in the backseat of Pulp Fiction, basically.
Yes. That's what it reminds me of. You shot Marvin in the face.
It's always like, whoops.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, I will say that of the characters in the show that, you know, we've been pretty straightforward with our criticism, to use your model of you removed Otis is much missing. If you remove Gaetano, there would be a hole in this show.
Oh, absolutely.
And his journey from where we hate him so much to where we get a little more understanding of him and see him get close with his brother. We may not want him to win the war, and we probably want him, but we probably want a more noble death for him in a way.
Right.
It was satisfying in that he went out in a comical way, but now it throws, you know, to use a chess analogy, since the world is aflame with the Queen's Gambit. I mean, in a lot of ways, Josto's lost his queen. Gaetano was his most powerful ally, both physically and with his ability to rally the troops. And so his army's in disarray.
Right. Now, I wonder if Josto will try to spin his death in any way, or just because he probably is not going to tell people he shot him, his brother killed himself by accident. Maybe he'll be like Otis had done it or something. In some shootout kind of way, and maybe he'll take credit for killing Otis. It doesn't really matter. He's the one in charge of the family. Just the way he just leaves him there, but I guess he doesn't really have a choice at that point.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad, but you do feel bad for him. But I also did think in the moment, like I can't believe he's just leaving him there. That's his brother.
Oh yeah. Unlike the way, like Loy has to be dragged away. You know, because he doesn't want to leave Dr. Senator there, but he has to. He doesn't have a choice. And whereas Josto doesn't seem to have that kind of problem, and it's his own damn brother. So kind of shows the measure of a man or lack thereof, you know. Maybe not even big as a pickle. Anyway.
Right. That's, so. You know, and I hadn't thought about that. I mean, just outside a car on the road is where Dr. Senator got killed with Gaetano and Calamita. And Calamita killed him, but Gaetano was there and sort of ordered it. There was sort of a fitting symmetry that mm-hmm. Gaetano would die laying on the street and with the body left there like Dr. Senator.
Yep. So then when we go to the next scene, it was interesting because we do this interesting camera movement. And I initially thought the way it was done that, oh, is this the POV of, I keep calling him the Roach because I thought he was called I'll just say the ghost. Can we just call him that? Because I feel stupid now, more so than usual. I initially think it's here's what I thought. I thought because of the quick movement of the camera, it's the POV of the ghost. But then we see it's Arietta in bed, and then we see at the foot of the bed, it's Ethelreda in bed, and we see Arietta is standing there. And then I went, oh. I guess it was her POV. But then when the ghost appears behind her, it's like, no. It was the ghost POV all along, and just him coming there, and she's already there. She'd already gotten in. We didn't follow her into the house to her room. We followed the ghost because it doesn't make sense that she's not a track runner.
I totally the way you perceived it and then reanalyzed it is exactly what I did, because even the sort of the picture, at least it looked like to me, was a little blurry mm-hmm. as the camera movements were made. So I took it to be the ghost. Yeah. And then we have this, you know, and we've said it early on, every season has some supernatural event of big importance. And this, you know, one of the main characters is saved by a supernatural event in this episode.
Right, and you know, also provided a bit of a distraction or an issue at the train station sequence as well. But yep. Here, I mean, basically, the thing that, you know, quote unquote, has been haunting this family and specifically this girl all this time, essentially came to her rescue. Yeah, because you know, Arietta's about to inject her with something from one of her what she call it, her bottles of death.
Yeah.
I love that phrase, though. She didn't say bottles of poison. She said bottles of death. Of course, Arietta screams and presumably goes running out of the house. You know, I guess she's able to get out of the house before her. I'm not sure how she screams in the room that's at the top of the stairs. And we saw there's a guy with a gun down at the bottom. So I guess maybe it's Lemuel or whatever. And how he didn't stop her when she was running out. Because you'd think that scream would have woken him up. But who cares? Not important. What's more important is she bolts across the street to her house, to her apartment, and apparently in the time that she's been away, which I can't imagine had been that long, the police are there already. Because as we were waiting to find out, Dr. Harvard has woken up, and yeah, she's not. I don't think she's gonna skate on that one.
No, she's not. And let me tell you what I thought was brilliant. I just want to go back for a second to the ghost.
Go ahead.
What I thought was brilliant about that is the way that Ethelreda and her mom talk about the ghost. And it's just sort of matter of fact. And they just say, like, we've been living with it for all these years.
Right.
Basically, they've been living with the remnants of slavery for all these years.
Right.
When Ethelreda, you know, a privileged white person who says what she'd said, sees the ghost or feels the ghost or has to confront the ghost, she completely freaks out and runs away.
I make the same mistake myself every time.
A brilliant commentary on how the vestiges of slavery are dealt with by, you know, black people and white people. And I thought that was really creative, the way that the Putney family just sort of ho-hums it, that, you know, your granny saw it, here's where it comes from, this is what it is. And despite that, they don't run, they don't leave their house. Like, she's sleeping peacefully knowing there's a ghost in the house. And the ghost ends up saving her, and Orietta takes off and, you know, comes into her house and tries to put her brave face on, but doesn't last long.
No, because she can't get her back.
Yeah. Now, do you think she was going to try to kill herself?
I don't know. She doesn't seem like the type that would do that, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe she was. I'm kind of curious what's going to happen in the final episode based on the scenes I saw. I don't know if I should say that on the podcast or not. All I'll say is that clearly she's not under total lock and key when we get to the final episode. Not sure how that happens, but somehow, I don't know if there's bail involved and who would be paying that bail, but or maybe, who knows. But we see her in the ad for the next episode, and she's clearly not, you know, in a jail cell, let's put it that way. Which pretty much takes us to the final scene of the entire episode, and that's the one that, you know, we were waiting for early on when Ethelreda had mentioned she wanted to see Lemuel's dad. I hope Lemuel? That's how you pronounce it. Loy. So she does get to go see Loy. And Loy instinctively thinks, oh, she's here because she's going to, you know, again, plead for them to get their house back, to get their business back, whatever. She pretty much showcases how smart and clever she is. Everything from identifying the painting that he has a printed copy of that he doesn't even know about himself, to discussing the actual issues of the war that he's in. You know, I love that she mentions that, you know, he's lost 27 men, and he says something like that. She's like, no, exactly like that. She's about, yeah. Especially in this day and age, I love someone just being, no, these are the facts. I'm giving you the facts now. And finally, we finally get to play with what that ring means and how it's going to get used. And I've, you know, we've been waiting for this for who knows how long now. It's been, you know, it's been that one thing. And like, we're waiting because they don't know what's going to happen when they find this out. And she basically After Lloyd says, and, you know, you come up with a way for me to win this war, I'll give you anything you want. And, you know, you swear? Swear. That's when, you know, she tells him, after she's given him the ring, and then he doesn't think much of it until she tells him the story about the nurse across the street, and then shows him the article, the paper that she took from the library, which pretty much cinches that ring was the Don's ring. Therefore, Orietta, this nurse, killed their dad. And this is the song you wanted to talk about. I don't just love the fact that they used that song, that version of whatever version it is of Higher Ground. The fact, and I almost think they did it on purpose, because before the song really kicks in at the very beginning, and you know, we're still looking at Ethelreda on screen. We hear the guy in the song going, "Yes, she did."
Yeah.
Because I wanted someone else to say, "No, she didn't." "Yes, she did." Cut to credits, and we get to listen to the rest of the song, which most people know more as either a Stevie Wonder song or even the Red Hot Chili Peppers version of it. But obviously, I'm sure you're going to tell us who sings this version, or be the 17 versions of it, or what have you.
This was the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, yeah, pretty well known, mostly gospel, but do some popular music group. But yeah, I love the ending, and I will say, you and I have talked about this before. This was the musical choice, the way it ended with Ethelreda's triumph with Loy, was maybe one of the most optimistic endings of an episode of Fargo.
Yes.
It ended on an up note. Now, going into the finale, we don't know what that means, because this show throws so many curveballs, but it ended in a place where, dare I say, we were happy.
That's got to be my takeaway from it, because there was a certain level of satisfaction with a number of things here. You know, this one more so than anything else. Orietta getting taken, you know, finally getting busted by the cops, was kind of, and her getting bested by this girl also was kind of satisfying as well. We felt more about Gaetano. We feel more for Gaetano now than we did maybe just a few episodes ago. So I can't say that we were, you know, quote unquote, happy with his death. But in a way, just the resolution of, okay, we just took those two players off the board. Your queen and your pawn, if you will, if you're going to keep your queen's gambit references here. This is why you're not going to be on the podcast. Anyway.
I thought that the episodes have been so scattered. This jumped around a lot, but I thought it had a lot of good forward momentum, and I found myself liking it quite a bit. I really enjoyed it. And seeing that character, I mean, in this episode, Ethelreda was almost like, you know, Veronica Mars or Nancy Drew.
Yep.
Putting all this stuff together and throwing in that she knows, you know, art history and painters, and her standing up and asserting to Loy, like, you just see a girl here? And saying, like, look, I'm smart. I'm so smart. I can help you win a war. Seeing her be so formidable at this juncture and at the end, and the way it ended, it left me with a good feeling. And I really enjoyed it, and am curious how they tie the knots together in the finale.
What it finally accomplished for her character, for me personally, that I wouldn't have said before this episode. During the first 9 episodes. After this episode, I actually thought, because she's... Do they say that she's 17 in this episode? Is that how old she is supposed to be, I think? I'm not sure. She's a teenager, regardless. You know, I can't remember if she's 17, or I might be confusing it with another show I've watched recently, and maybe she's younger than that. Maybe she's 15. Maybe she's 13. I don't know. She's a teen. I'm curious about what happens with grown-up Ethelreda. I'm just curious now. I mean, I want to see... I'm assuming they're not going to throw a real nasty curveball at us and kill her. That would be shocking. But, you know, I kind of want to see, I'm kind of curious about Ethel Reed in her, like, her late 30s or early 40s, you know, paging one of the great actresses who can pull that off for a future season of Fargo. You know, I don't know what she's going to be. I don't know exactly where she'll be 20, 25 years from now, which this is 1950s. Hey, they could have a season in the 70s. You know,
in 1980. Yeah, that, I mean, it would be cool to see maybe Ethel Reed be, you know, the director of a forensic crime lab or something, you know, an investigator of some sort, because obviously she has great investigation skills.
You know what they should do?
FBI agent.
You know what they should do? At the end of the final episode, we fast forward 25 years and we see Ethel Reeda having a scene with Mike Milligan. There you go.
I was going to say, if you wanted to make a season, have her hunting Mike Milligan. That would be pretty cool. Like her being the law enforcement person tracking down Mike Milligan.
Yeah, okay. I'm already more interested in her than I was in Carrie Coon in season 3. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I will say I will end by saying this about the episode, that I would at least like to see at the end of the last episode at least an epilogue about what happens to her in the future, yeah, if she survives.
I'm very curious. I mean, she would be right now. She's the one character I'm most curious about. You know, although, but what about Zero? Anyway, so you never know. He could end up being someone major. You never know. Oh, why did I wait till now to drink that? Okay, I always forget to wait. I'll do the wrap-up first, and then I'll talk about all the podcasting stuff in the future. Okay, so keep listening after this wrap-up, because I got other stuff to talk about here. But if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Fargo and so many others. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe to our feed there as well as rate and review us. You know, hey, give us a 1-star review like that other guy did. I don't know. That's going to happen for the next podcast we release. Anyway, you can also find pretty much our last 50 podcasts on Stitcher. I'm still waiting for the first download there. it's Stitcher.com. I think that's enough to find it. If it's not, it's Stitcher.com/podcast/the-serious-tv-drama-podcast. It's a mouthful. It's ridiculous saying all that. It's on Stitcher. You'll find it. Better still, you can find our entire archive of podcasts at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. This will be number 286, so you'll find all 286 of our podcasts there. And finally, you can follow us on... I never tell people about their email. I don't think we've ever gotten an email. Anyway, you know, it's good. I don't even... I keep forgetting what the password is to get to our email account, so it's kind of pointless. But you can follow us on Twitter, and, you know, hey, feel free to tweet us, and hey, here's an idea. Retweet our fucking podcast so we could actually get a couple more listeners. That'd be nice. Anyway, our handle on Twitter is at STVD Podcast, as STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Okay, so... let me figure this all out now, because I don't have notes about this, but I'm going to have to do it by memory. Obviously, Brian and I will be back next week. We'll be recording next Sunday night, unless something weird should happen, when we will be covering the season finale of Fargo. I'm betting that's going to be like an at least an hour and a half episode. I'm going to have the TV show, not the podcast. It's a final one. So I bet it's going to be an hour and a half. You think it'll be shorter? Or you think...
Yeah, I'd say an hour and a half's a good guess.
I bet it's going to be an hour. Watch, it's like 42 minutes. Okay. So that's next Sunday. However, for your podcasting ears, we are releasing a podcast that's going to come out on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. It is the latest in the series of the greatest TV drama episodes of all time. It will be covering number 16 on that countdown. which I believe was Hannibal. The second season finale of that TV show, which was titled Mizumono. Dan joins me for that podcast. Yeah, we already recorded it. Someone else also joins us for a bit of that podcast as well. If you were in any way, shape, or form a fan of our podcast on Hannibal from about 5 years ago, you might already suspect who I'm talking about. And if not, you should have listened to them. Anyway, so y'all got that to look forward to. Beyond that, I will mention, because that's kind of changing the schedule a little bit because of the holidays, the next episode of the greatest TV drama episodes, blah, 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 would be the following Friday on December 4th. I just can't tell you what that is yet. In addition to all that, because, I'm suffering from physical pain, I got to give myself some more stress. I have committed or agreed to take the tentative off label off the thing that's on the schedule, and there will be a podcast being released, I'm going to say sometime in the next week and change. We haven't figured out a date for recording. We're going to be covering season 4 of The Crown and The Queen's Gambit in one podcast. Oh, and by the way, if we're covering season 4 of The Crown, guess what? There's probably going to be at least a good 10-15 minutes covering seasons 2 and 3 because we never covered seasons 2 and 3. So, yeah, that might be a long podcast. Yeah, we'll see. I believe Kimber, who joined us for The Crown podcast from a million years ago, and he also covered The Umbrella Academy with me? Is that the one he did with me?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, because each of the superhero ones, like me and you did Doom Patrol, me and Jamie did The Boys. That's right, he did Umbrella Academy with me. That's correct. Yeah, he's been bugging me about this, so, whatever. Of course, he's already saying, it's going to be a 6 to 8 hour podcast. I'm like, shut up. David God will be thrilled. Anyway, and I think that pretty much covers it. From that point on, the rest of the year will be, because after Fargo will be over, there'll be a few more of the greatest TV drama episode series. I think we're going to get up to number, there it goes again. I don't know if we'll get up to number 12 or 11 by the end of the year. And I believe probably in the new year, I'll try to pull together some sort of best of, I don't know if I like using the phrase best of 2020 for a year like this, but forgetting real life, at least as far as TV is concerned, I think there's enough to talk about. I think there might be some stuff.
How about personal favorites of 2020?
That can be how you describe your list, Brian. That's if I let you have a list.
I was just making a suggestion. I just throwing out a suggestion.
That's okay. There's a reason why I keep the suggestion box right over the garbage can and there's no bottom.
File 13.
Who do you think you're talking to? The guy who complains about the podcast length, and he does like 90% of the talking at the time. If you just edit yourself, you fat fuck, maybe you could. Anyway, so that is it for tonight's podcast. It's already better than the Hannibal one. Ooh, I should have said that out loud. Anyway, so Brian, once again, thank you for joining us for this foray to Fargo. Look forward to recording with you next week. I should say it now because I didn't say it at the end of the Hannibal podcast, which was stupid because I knew it was going to be released the day before Thanksgiving. So I'll say it now. Hope everybody out there has a happy Thanksgiving this week. Do what you can. Have your limited family gatherings wherever possible. You can't gain weight if you eat your dessert through Zoom. So there, so you have that. Brian, I will thank you again, and I will leave it to you to have the last word.
I hope everyone has a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And Scott, I appreciate you letting me join this podcast, as this is my first podcast since I have left the important demographic, and I'm now officially an old man. whose opinion no longer matters, but I greatly enjoyed it and can't wait for the finale next week.
Okay, see, I can't let that be the last word. I can't. Because you joined my club, so fuck you for saying that.
There you go.
Anyway, we're both.
There you go.
It took 2020. We're not just the both the same age, reaching the unwanted demographic. Now I've got a beard to rival yours as well. So one of our listeners who only gives me crap for the beard, which is why I don't care about her opinion anymore. But she didn't say anything to you. You see that? Never said nothing to you.
Well, you know. What can I say? Beards are my thing.
There you go. But I thought you were married. Anyway.
That may be why I used to be.
Hello, Frisco. Anyway, all right. On that,
good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.